It's time to talk sports. It's Hacksaw's Headlines, a panorama of the world of sports, stories, comments, and opinions.
Touchdown, San Diego!
Now, here's iconic sports talk show host Lee Hacksaw Hamilton and co-host John Riley.
Who wants to talk sports on a Monday? We do. From our Dixieline Lumber and Home Center studios in San Diego, we welcome you to Hacksaw's Headlines, our Monday bonus podcast. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, along with my co-host, John Riley. We welcome you to our Monday bonus broadcast. A ton of topics on the table with a lot of late-breaking stories. We're going to go a lot of different directions in this show. The podcast is brought to you by Dixieline Lumber and Home Center. Nine stores in San Diego to serve you. You've got projects for the spring into the summer, whether it's in the house, outside on the patio, or in the workplace. Think Dixieline Lumber. And by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido, we will all need help with our eyes one of these years when you do, whether it's something as simple as a vision test to something as complicated as cataracts. Think North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. John Riley, good afternoon. Let me see your eyes. Are they as bloodshot as my eyes?
Yeah, really.
Did you watch too much basketball?
Yeah, well, there's never enough basketball in the first weekend of March Madness.
Absolutely amazing. We're going to cover a lot of different things, going a lot of different places today. Item one. John, let's tell everybody about our fans forum, what happens at the end of the podcast, and how those of you who are with us on live stream can be part of our podcast in fans forum.
Yeah, you got a comment or question for Lee? Just drop your comment, your take into the live chat, Facebook, YouTube, or on X, and we'll get you involved in fans forum.
And a reminder, we want you to join our new club. It's called Hacksaw's Insiders Group. If you go to my website, that's the address, leehacksawhamilton.com. There's a big orange box right there at the top. Just fill out the information. You'll get the emails about all the different things we're rolling out in 2024. John, let's talk hoops. Let's talk about what happened to the team here.
Yeah, San Diego State, you know, had an interesting run here. Got a little squirrely in that first game.
Aztecs, nice headline. Next stop. Boston, Sweet 16, thank you, Jaden Ledee. You know, there's a big distance between San Diego and New Haven, Connecticut. Big distance between the level of player in the Mountain West and the kids that play in the Ivy League. Yale's head coach, James Jones, he found out on Sunday, you're not playing Princeton or Harvard or Brown anymore. The Bulldog players found out what a real first-round draft pick looks like in Jaden Ledee. San Diego State, 10-0 lead right out of the gate, 11-0 spurt later in the first half. Ledee went crazy. He hit every type of shot. They had nobody to confront him. Wound up with 15 points in the first 12 minutes. The bench bunch hit three-point shots. They shot 60% in the first half of the game, opened up a massive 21-point lead. Yale went 6 minutes without a basket. They had six mixed field goals, two turnovers, blowout city all of a sudden. Here's a weird stat. You know the term I used, Jekyll and Hyde?
Oh, yeah.
San Diego State, going into March Madness, was ranked 306th in three-point efficiency.
Oh, my God.
And they hit 13 threes. 13 threes after being 306th in the nation. Ledee finished with 26. Darian Trammell, where'd this come from? 18 points. And, of course, the Aztecs not only hit 13 threes, they had 48 rebounds in the game, wound up shooting 55%. On to Boston we go, to the Sweet 16. And just ahead, that's UConn, 33-3, the guys who played in the championship game last year. This is a really tough assignment. San Diego State did not get home till 4 o'clock Monday morning. So they got a limited window of practice on Monday. They'll have whatever full practice they have on Tuesday. They'll have a bit of a walkthrough on Wednesday. They didn't get on a plane, and they go to Boston. They have to play Thursday at 4:40 p.m. This is a really short work week, and not only short work week, limited time to recover, limited time to practice game plan, you're going to Boston, which means everybody in the arena will probably be wearing UConn blue and white.
Right.
I mean, this is going to be a really tough road trip. There's no doubt San Diego State has earned it. I don't know if they've got enough firepower to match up with the UConn, because UConn is just stomping everybody they're playing right now. So, John, I watched it. I enjoyed it. I think we say thank you, Jaden Ledee. I don't know if there's another game after Thursday's game.
We got to love Sweet 16 2 years in a row. Yeah. I mean, that's nice, you know, and it's not like the championship game, that moment was, you know, it wasn't as if that was a one-time thing, right? You know, so the Aztecs are back in the mix. And you look at all the other teams that are in the Sweet 16, a lot of blue bloods in there, a lot of longtime performers. So good on San Diego State. But it got a little squirrely there in that first game against UAB. Yep. I got kind of nervous. But, you know, Dutcher and the boys, they said they had the confidence from the experience from last year.
I'll tell you, their ability to make adjustments midstream against UAB, because that coaching staff changed up their defenses virtually every other trip down the floor. San Diego State was looking at something different defensively. Yeah. And that's why they struggled, and that's why there were so many turnovers in the Alabama-Birmingham game, because there was no rhythm and flow, because they're looking, is that a zone? Is it a 1-3-1 zone? Is it a box and one against Ladee? And then suddenly they couldn't hit shots, and they're throwing the ball away, and they were forcing things, trying to run it up the floor. But they gathered it back in. And at the end of the day, Ladee did what Ladee always does. He's fouling out all your big men.
Yeah, all of them.
He did it to UAB. He obviously did it to Yale. I give Yale a lot of credit. I could see how they could own the Ivy League, because they do have athletes, they do have size, they do have quickness, and they ran some schematic stuff with backdoor passes to say, wow, I can understand them blowing everybody in the Ivy League out. San Diego State struggled for chunks of time with some of the pick and rolls and backdoor stuff, and then they made some adjustments, and that took Yale out of the game. So on we go. That's San Diego State, Boston, Thursday afternoon. That is the UConn Huskies.
Is the kryptonite problem solved, Lee?
Well, it was on Sunday. Yeah. I have huge reservations at Jekyll and Hyde.
If they can repeat that, though, if they can repeat that on Thursday, I think the Aztecs have a shot.
Against UConn?
They came close in the championship game. They got it down to 5 in the second half.
Against a 33-3 UConn team.
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, they beat number one overall seed Alabama last year.
You're entitled to wear your heart on your sleeve. I have no problem with that. I'm just dealing with some realities of what I see. Okay, let's talk about what we saw during a tournament.
Yeah, oh, so many crazy games and upsets, and I'm still kind of exhausted from watching that Grand Canyon Alabama game.
Upset City, good headline there, John. 12 upsets overall in the first weekend. I tried to figure out which was the biggest upset of all. Was it Gonzaga taking out Kansas? The Zags hit 60% of their shots against the Jayhawks, who had one of the best big men in the country. They hit only 38% of the shots. Or was it Oakland and what they did to John Calipari in Kentucky? Or was it Yale taking out Auburn? Auburn self-destructed when ex-Aztec Chad Baker flipped an errant elbow running down the court, hit a kid in the face in response to getting bounced the prior possession. Mm-hmm. And Chad Baker, Mazzara, got ejected from the game. Their power forward. 4 minutes into the game, he got thrown out.
Yeah.
And he took no responsibility. My guys, I got my guys at my back. What BS. I mean, he cost Auburn that game. You got Grand Canyon eliminating St. Mary's. How is that possible?
Yeah.
A week after St. Mary's had blown out Gonzaga in the WCC championship, James Madison beat Wisconsin of the Big Ten.
That was a big one.
Dayton went 24-4 run at the end. Took out Nevada?
Yeah.
Wow. Clemson beat Baylor. Baylor was third seed. Houston nearly got upset by Texas A&M. 4 of the 5 starters of the Cougars fouled out on that game. Luckily, they survived. And Colorado had to get 100 points to beat Florida. So I just think there's so many wild first weekend games. 12 upsets in all. Purdue, Zachary, two games. 53 points, 35 rebounds in 2 games so far for the Boilermakers.
That dude.
What a monster, man.
Incredible.
Somebody in the NBA is going to get an amazing player. I tried to think, how good is he right now, talent-wise, compared to Victor Wembanyama, who is seen doing great individual things on a bad San Antonio team? Somebody's going to get Zach in the NBA lottery. And I don't know how to respond to the massive disappointment of the Mountain West Conference. Aztecs are still playing. Utah State got to the finals on Sunday, got beat. Nevada got blown out. Boise got blown out. New Mexico got torched. Colorado State lost. A little bit of disappointment for the 6th that got in the Mountain West. There's only one left, and that's the flag carrier, San Diego State. Sweet 16, some good games coming.
Oh, yeah.
Don't book anything on your schedule Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Houston, Duke, that'll be a doozy. Arizona, Clemson, Purdue, Gonzaga. Those to me are the top games as we go to the Sweet 16. So 12 upsets. Comment if you will.
Comments all over the place. That's so many storylines in this tournament. Like the Grand Canyon team reminds me of San Diego State 15, 20 years ago, you know, where they recruit these really long athletic guys that could play D, could hustle, but couldn't make a shot. That was a really entertaining game when they went up against Alabama in the second round. Zach Edey, you know, do you see that interview with him after the game? I mean, just all business.
Yeah, and just basketball.
Incredible.
No pressure.
But, you know, you're asking where is he going to be listed in the draft? And I like to look around on some NBA mock drafts from time to time because I'm interested to see where they have Ladie. Well, one of these guys had Zach Edey in the second round, and they've got all these dudes like from, you know, international leagues, you know. So, and so like the complexity of the draft has changed so much in the NBA. So who knows where Edey's going to land?
Yeah, with the Euros for certain. Okay, we go from that to the day after. A lot of stuff happening on Monday morning.
Yeah, so we were just talking about this earlier. Coaches are switching teams here, Lee.
Yeah, real suddenly. And it's a bit of a stunner. One and done. I'm talking about what just happened at Utah State. Utah State lost its coach after one season. Danny Sprinkles, who came to Utah State from Montana State, went 28-7, left this morning. He has gone to the Washington Huskies. Washington last week fired Mike Hopkins, who had been there, had some good seasons, had some not so good seasons. So that's a big blow to Utah State, and I would assume he's going to take his big man, Great Uzidor, with him to Seattle. So Danny Sprinkles, 1 year, great job, Utah State, going to Washington. Stanford went across the state line and hired a new coach, Washington State's coach, Kyle Smith. They were 25-10. Pac-12 Coach of the Year with the Cougars. He winds up going down to Palo Alto. He'll take over a bedraggled Stanford Cardinal team. There were like three other coaching hires around the country, other parts of the nation, but those are two marquee names. Kyle Smith did a great job 3 years in a row in the Palouse at Washington State, and obviously what Sprinkles did, one and done at Utah State. Big blow for Utah State.
Yeah, I mean, Sprinkles kind of rolled in and did amazing things, and now he's rolling out. But there's also the coach from Florida Atlantic is now in Michigan now, right?
Right. He got hired by Michigan. Ex-Ohio State coach got hired this weekend, and there were more coaching hires in Vanderbilt and a few other places today.
So what do you think, talk about the Mountain West, who do you think is going to replace Justin Hudson? Is there any discussion of that?
Not yet, but their problem is there's a reputation there that's troublesome. It's a football school that's got limitations in NIL money. Now, they'll find a young coach on the up and coming, but they're not walking in the front door with a lot of resources to use on Fresno State basketball.
Right.
And I'll be intrigued to see where Justin Hudson winds up, maybe as somebody's assistant. I don't know if he's going to get hired immediately to be a head coach, but maybe he'll bounce back and be somewhere else on somebody's staff.
Well, I saw a rumor on social media of Nico Medved maybe being the next coach at West Virginia.
West Virginia went and hired the Drake coach this morning.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
And Nico's a good coach, too.
Yeah, he is.
So, okay, that's where we are, all things basketball. You got an opinion on the Aztecs as they get ready to go tangle with UConn? You agree with me that this thing is really stacked against them because of the short work week, East Coast trip, early game? But join us in Fans Forum. You want to talk college basketball, feel free to be part of it. Let's go from that. Let's talk baseball, John.
Baseball, yeah, kind of a special day at Petco Park.
Yeah, what an emotional day. Celebration of life for St. Peter. Peter Seidler, the late owner of the San Diego Padres. Tremendous turnout. Virtually the entire organization. Some fans were there. It was obviously impacted by the rainy weather over the weekend. I'll tell you what, as I paid attention to it, all I could think of is Peter Seidler used to walk around with a baseball in his hand, and he'd flip that baseball. He'd be talking, he'd flip it.
Yeah.
He just loved the game. I could see him in heaven flipping that baseball, watching the proceedings down at Petco Park. Most unique man I ever dealt with in terms of a man who had wealth. You know, I'd get emails from him at 3 o'clock in the morning. He and I would exchange ideas, and he read my columns and my website all
right
the time.
On.
And he'd respond at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was downtown. I'd run into him at CVS. He was in there buying soap or something. I mean, he's just like an average guy.
He wasn't
the wealthiest man in baseball. Phenomenal speech by A.J. Preller. We have to win for that man. Manny Machado called him the most unique human being he had ever met. Joe Musgrove was so choked up. he called him a hometown hero, even though he was from L.A. So it was really a classy ceremony. Loved the logo. His family, his kids developed. The logo is now plastered across the front of Petco Park and along the press box. And, of course, they will wear that heart for Peter Seidler right above their heart on the Padre jerseys. Your response?
We kind of went through a lot of this when he passed away last year. Good on the Padres for having this event. But yeah, he's only been a San Diego icon for a very short time, you know, but what a special guy. And I just like the whole idea of him walking around with a baseball in hand. He understood how baseball is romantic, you know, and he understood the history of the game and he got it, you know, and he just, what a lovely man. So you see Manny Machado up there and heartfelt comments, you know, talking about he's going to be there for Peter's kids. And it's just a really warm moment. And, you know, in the beginning, when he showed up on the scene, he's the other rich guy. But then we learned so much more about him that he's just very special. So now the Padres, you would think, would have all this sort of emotional energy building in a positive way to go win one for Peter.
The wealth, the depth of the wealth of the man was only surpassed by the depth of the wealth of the person. All the things
agreed.
All the things are important to him. Mm-hmm. Baseball, downtown San Diego, the homeless, women's shelters. He was just one of the really deep people who cared about all these different things. Phenomenal guy.
Well, did you see the part of the event where Eric Kutsenza spoke? Mm-hmm. And those two are good friends going back to their, you know, teen years. They were roommates in their 20s. And to see him get emotionally choked up about this, it was a special moment for me, because when you have a new CEO or chairman of the board that comes in, you don't know what to expect with new leadership. This at least made me feel comfortable as a fan that the money might not be the same, but the goal, the aspirations, the vision and love of Peter Seidler is going to continue with new leadership.
Yeah, the last memorial service celebration of life I attended at Petco was for Kevin Towers, the general manager, who is really cut from a different cloth. And all these baseball scouts from everywhere showed up to honor Kevin after KT had passed away from a long bout with cancer at such a young age. So very, very emotional thing. Remembering, great guy.
Oh, for sure.
Let's go from Petco Park. Let's go to Dodger Stadium because as the hours change, the story changes with Showtime.
Yeah, I mean, there a lot changed right before our Thursday podcast. A lot's changed since then.
Yeah. I guess I'll throw out a phrase here that I think we probably should add to any conversation as it relates to Shohei Ohtani. Rush to judgment. Let's not rush to judgment until we have all the facts. He is scheduled to speak before the Dodger-Angel game tonight. However, they've indicated now taking no questions. They're going to try to control the environment. They're going to try to use the excuse about language barrier, etc. To me, they lose credibility. He loses credibility if he thinks he can hide behind the curtain of I don't speak English, so therefore I'll be limited in what I'm going to say, and I'm not going to answer any questions from anybody. He's going to have to answer questions from the commissioner. He's going to have to answer questions from the IRS. This thing has grown and expanded. Let me run you through the background of data that I've been able to gather, kind of a timeline. But at the end of the day, E.P. Muzuhara, his personal aide, betrayed his friendship. MLB, as I was told, was aware of the irregularities involving something with Ohtani last Monday in Korea. They called the FBI, got no response. They called the CBI, the California Bureau of Investigation. They got no cooperation there. This was after the AP and the LA Times investigated Matt Boyer, an illegal bookmaker in Orange County, because Ohtani's name somehow came up in discussions when Boyer was being interviewed with other people. We found out that Boyer dropped Ohtani's name as if he was a client. Boyer was trying to show street cred.
Right.
Anyhow, the media confronted Muzuhara. Muzuhara confirmed he asked Ohtani to help pay his debts to fix failed investments. He lied to him initially. It was failed investments. He didn't talk about gambling.
Right.
Then The story changed. Then suddenly, Muzuhara came back and said, well, Ohtani gave me loans for failed business investments. The agent, based in San Diego, Nesbalelo, confronted Muzuhara. Muzuhara admitted he lied. It wasn't business investments. It was $4.5 million in gambling debts. The agent told Ohtani, you paid his gambling debts to an illegal bookmaker? Then Ohtani's legal firm went into action, and they notified MLB of missing funds in Ohtani's accounts. Now there's evidence that Ohtani and Muzuhara accessed the accounts nine times, withdrew $500,000 each time, $4.5 million to transfer money over a year and a half. That money was paid to Boyer's illegal gambling accounts in Orange County. Now we're finding out this morning, Muzuhara, who worked with Ohtani while with the Angels, lied to the Angels about his background, about his work, quote, in college. He never went to college. Working for the Red Sox, he never worked for the Red Sox. Now they're investigating whether or not Muzuhara, who worked for the Nippon Ham Fighters, where he first met Ohtani, whether he was involved in Japanese gambling. That's being investigated. The IRS is now investigating tax code violations. You can't make donations as business loans to gamblers.
Right.
That's a big issue. And I'm expecting that before this Dodger-Angel game, Ohtani will announce he's denouncing this guy and he's going to sue him. Now, what are you going to sue him? He's got no money. All he's got is debts everywhere. So you got the MLB probe, you got the IRS probe. Other baseball people have been close to Ohtani, says he never bet on sports. He even refused to go to casinos with teammates while they were on the road. He's going to cooperate, going to have to cooperate. He's not going to be put on administrative leave, at least that's what I'm led to believe. Dodgers were shocked at team meetings. The Angels said, why would he bet on anything? He had no interest in any other sport except Major League Baseball. I wonder if this becomes a distraction for the team in the clubhouse going forward. So Ohtani's just going to make a statement. He's not going to take any questions. I think that's a credibility issue for me. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's going to hide behind not only the language barrier, but hide behind, well, it's a federal investigation. I can't say this. I can't say that at this point in time. Somewhere down the line, there's going to have to be some accountability of what he knew, when he knew it, and why he did what he did. I was told by a reporter from Japan that I interact with that Ohtani last year made $90 million, $60 million in endorsements, $30 million last year salary with the Angels. And $4.5 million, that's 25 cents to him. And Ohtani doesn't pay much attention to money, no matter how he makes. There is an alarming aspect, though, that they're looking into charitable foundations that Ohtani has funded in his career, and they're trying to determine, as of Monday midday, whether Muzuhara had access to funds with a charitable foundation, because Muzuhara was doing a lot of business stuff for Ohtani. We've not heard the end of the story. So, John, your response.
Where do you start with all this? I mean, first, I'm having visions of Sammy Sosa in front of Congress.
No, you know, parle anglais.
Exactly. Right. So the speculation on social media is wild. I mean, there are some people that claim Ohtani is innocent and the interpreter is the one that's the bad guy. But there's other people that are convinced that Ohtani is doing all the gambling and he's got to be held accountable to law, and they want to drag him down. And, you know, it's amazing. To your point, we shouldn't be jumping to conclusions. But this thing, I think, has become a big deal, you know, legally, because gambling is illegal in California on sports, which still strikes me as bizarre how we can bet on sports in 40 states, but California's so-called, you know, progressive state doesn't allow it. I think that's what got him into trouble the most legally. But, you know, in the end, I hope Major League Baseball does the proper investigation here, and they've got to do their due diligence. And yeah, that may require Ohtani to kind of take a back seat, at least in terms of how he comments publicly. But we need to get through this because it's lingering too long.
And it's going to be a shadow in the Dodger clubhouse going forward. And there's a sidebar story with all the attention that's being focused on him. And, you know, there are like 70 Japanese, Korean, Taiwanese media that are at every Dodger game and every Dodger practice in the Dodger clubhouse, and they've overtaken the locker room. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder how the star players are going to react to that, because Ohtani is as great a player as he is kind of distant. He's standoffish. He's in his own Japanese culture world. And I wonder if Dodger players are going to start to get tired of this, that all the attention is on him and his scandal and not on a first-place team and the other stars that they've got. There's a second layer here that we're going to have to pay attention to going forward.
Well, let's see how the Dodgers come out of the gate. I mean, imagine if they struggle in April and if Yamamoto turns out to be a bomb like he was in Game 2 of the season. So, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of interesting angles to this. It seems to me, though, that there's generally a good vibe in the Dodgers clubhouse with Dave Roberts' leadership, you know, at least before this whole scandal came up. So hopefully the boys in blue, they can handle this in the clubhouse. It may be tough.
No rush to judgment, please. We'll see where this goes. The story, though, is not going away. You got an opinion? Join us on Fans Forum. Tell us your thoughts on the Ohtani situation. We get to halftime, our Monday bonus podcast, our podcast brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center Stores. John, we all do projects around our house, whether that's your brand new British front door, whether it's the tiling, whether it's the windows, whether it's the screen doors on the patio. Explain to everybody what Dixie Line Lumber is all about.
Yeah, Dixie Line Lumber, been in business here in San Diego for over 100 years, providing everything you need for home repair, building a brand new home. And you know what? They're opening up a new facility in Dana Point. Dixie Line's expanding up in Orange County.
Dixie Line Lumber. Build it, fix it, guarantee you will enjoy it in 2024. And our podcast also brought to you by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. From comprehensive eye care to state-of-the-art technology, they have 11 different eye specialists on staff, 4 surgical specialists. Whether it's just exams, whether it's glasses, whether it's contacts, or whether it's something much more significant, when it comes time to get help for your eyes, go here, Poway, Escondido, North County Eye Center. Back here as our Monday bonus podcast continues. John, introduce everybody who's joined us on our live stream, including our O Canada group on the network, how they can get involved right at the end with what we call Fans Forum.
Yeah, Fans Forum. I mean, I've already seen everyone piling. I'm always sifting through the messages as we're doing the live stream. But hey, if you got a question or comment for Lee, drop your take in the live chat on Facebook, YouTube, or on X.
And a reminder, if you like sports, check my website. I write on it every day. It's there first thing every morning. And subscribe. You'll get it absolutely free. LeeHacksawHamilton.com. And by the way, join our team. If you're here in Southern California, I want you to be part of Hacksaw's Insiders Group. There's a big orange box right on the homepage of that website. Just fill out the information. You'll get on our mailing list. And a reminder, because we want this thing to be successful, we want you to share with all your friends, tell them what we're doing. We want you to subscribe. Subscribe so you'll get the alerts every time we put something up on the YouTube channel. And make sure that you're part of our programs on Monday at 1 p.m. and then again on Thursday at 1 p.m. Okay, so we've covered hoops. We've covered baseball. Busy stories in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, Lee, you were talking about this earlier. Some rules changes that the NFL's considering?
NFL owners' meetings began this morning in Orlando. They've made some rule changes immediately. There's going to be an additional vote tomorrow. The XFL kickoff rule has yet to be voted on. It might be voted tomorrow by the owners in Orlando, or it might be pushed back to the May meeting. This rule comes from the XFL, the Spring League. It was an experiment there. They seem to like it. This is all about preventing the collisions, the high-speed impact, the injuries on kickoff returns. What they're proposing is John's going to kick off to me. John's going to kick from his own 35, but his kick cover guys are going to line up at my 40. My blockers on the return team are going to line up at my 35. Your guys, my guys, are frozen. They can't move. The guy kicks it off. My guy in the end zone goes to return it. Nobody can move at the line of scrimmages until the ball is actually caught and the return begins. And what they're going to try to do is stop these gunners coming down at 100 miles an hour and the violent collisions and guys flying through the air and knee injuries and all that. They have yet to approve it. There's a lot of dialogue about it. Some think it's way too absurd to change the game. Others say we've got to change the game. There are more injuries on kick and punt returns than there are any other facet of the game. That has been delayed. They did reject the 4th and 20 rule. Now, this 4th and 20 rule was proposed by the Eagles to replace an onside kick. It'd be a 4th and 20 play, and if you made the 4th and 20 play, It's like you recovered an onside kick and you continue the possession down the field. They said that's too radical, too absurd. They're not going to do that. They did impose the ban on the hip drop tackle. A lot of injuries this past year. There were 230 incidents in their survey, all the film work of all the hits in football. 230 hip drop tackles. There were 15 catastrophic injuries by virtue of the hip drop. Now, it'll be a 15-yard penalty if you make that kind of play. It will be reviewed after Sunday, and the player that does it could get a significant fine. It's kind of been packaged like helmet hits. You hit me with your helmet.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a flag. Maybe there's not a flag. But it's going to be reviewed on Monday at the league office, and you could get a $25,000 fine, depending on the violence of the hit. So if there's somebody involved with a hip drop tackle, maybe there isn't a flag, or maybe there is a flag. It's going to be reviewed Monday. The guy who does the hip drop tackle can get fined in addition to the 15-yard penalty. They're also doing something different. We have a replay assistant in the booth. He's going to be on communication headset with the head referee. And if there is a questionable mistake, hit to the helmet of a quarterback scrambling over the line of scrimmage, if there is a grounding play that's not called correctly, the replay guy in the booth can message down to the referee, hold it, we're going to review, and the referee can either pick up the flag if there was a non-helmet hit, or he can throw a late flag if there was a late helmet hit.
Mm.
So they're using replay from a safety factor on a couple of other things. So that's the first group of rules that were passed, rejected, and tabled in the early Monday sessions in Orlando.
Well, I like the rules that they're going to, you know, get it right. I like seeing them get the play right and also protecting the player. So that all sounds good. I want to go back, though, to the kickoff. I'm trying to imagine in my mind, because we have kickoffs and we have punts, which are different. But in a kickoff, the kickoff kicker is going to still be in the same location.
35-yard line. You're 35 kicking to me in my end zone.
But he'll be out there on an island all by himself because the two lines are like only 5 yards apart, right?
And they can't move. They're frozen until the ball's put in play.
So the receiving team are going to have all their linemen like looking over their shoulder, like seeing when the guy's going to catch the ball.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting way. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't be opposed to just banning the kickoff entirely because 99 times out of 100, it's kicked into the end zone, right? I mean, so, but what about punts? Are they going to do anything changing the punts? Because you could still have those dudes on the outside, the gunners, and that's still going to happen, right?
But that's different than having one gunner or two gunners on the outside who can get blocked on the periphery than having 10 guys going downfield like a freight train.
Yeah, that is something. It's amazing they still allow that.
Yeah, 25% of all the major injuries in the NFL last season came on kickoff or punt returns.
Oh, I believe it. You know, if it's not trying to go after the receiver, it's all the guys blocking. I mean, it's a head-on train wreck.
Okay, NFL fans, join us on Fans Forum. Should we take the kickoff return out of the game just because of the injury factor more than anything else? Feel free to give us an opinion. Let's go from that. Let's talk about news and notes around the NFL.
Yeah, the Chargers, Keenan Allen, this trade is still a lot of bubbles rifting, right?
Yeah, a lot of conversation. He wound up, of course, going to the Chicago Bears in a deal. You know, just a little background. At one point, the Chargers were $55 million over the cap. And then, of course, the salary cap went up, so that gave them a little bit of relief. But they had to reduce the cap number, and they had to cut players loose. Players took pay cuts. Some players retired. Joey Bosa took a $4 million cut. Khalil Mack took a $7 million cut to help them. Keenan Allen was asked to take a $4 million cut and was given a contract extension for one additional year at a little bit of a different price. They said no. And within a day, he was traded to Chicago for a fourth-round draft pick. Allen wanted $24 million a year. Few receivers in the NFL make that. Clubs with big cap problems can't afford to sign anybody like that. I guess there's burning questions afterwards. Is Allen going to be happy in Chicago? They've had virtually no offense for years and years. Yeah, granted, they're going to have Caleb Williams, but that's Caleb Williams' rookie in the NFL. By the way, it's Chicago. That's cold. That's windy. That's snow. They don't have a history of throwing the bloody football. Keenan Allen's going there just for a payday when he could have been here, helped keep this team together. and maybe finished out with a Hall of Fame career. So did Allen wind up getting a good deal by denouncing the Chargers' ideas? Did the Chargers get enough? I mean, the guy's got 904 career receptions. He's had a couple of injuries, but he's played a ton of football. All they got was a fourth-round draft pick for Keenan Allen. I don't know that they got enough there. And I think the bigger issue, the Chargers, now you look at their depth chart, they strip-mine their offense. You know what strip-mining is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Right.
They do that in West Virginia with a coal.
Yeah.
You know, you just tear off the top of the land side, and all you got is what's left after they take the coal out. They strip mine the roster. No Austin Eckler, no Keenan Allen, no Mike Williams, no Gerald Everett.
Yeah.
That's a lot of talent around Justin Herbert. So that's a big issue there. So what – now, I know you're always – you must have been a member of a union. You're always on the player's side as it relates to anything dollars and cents related. But Keenan Allen handle this right?
I don't know. I mean, there's obviously a lot of history here and many contracts, longtime guy with the Chargers. Again, I don't blame him for going because show me the money. He got a contract. You fulfill the contract.
Show me your union card.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny, though, that it gives you greater insight to the motivation for most players. Because, you know, as fans, we like to think that we're all part of this tribe and we're all going to go out there and win one for the team. But for the players, it's their profession. And, you know, these are opportunities. So I don't blame him at all. The Chargers, it is interesting. I mean, every one of those names you listed is their starter in one of the skill positions. Yep. But they had to get rid of a lot of guys because the math didn't add up.
Exactly. Okay, let's go from that to the next topic on the table because we're in the third week of free agency.
Free agency. There's a lot of guys still on the board.
Well, there are, but not many. Do you know as we entered Monday, third week of free agency, 211 guys have changed teams so far in free agency. It doesn't include the eight different NFL trades. 211 have changed
teams.
Who's available? Only quarterback left of recognition is Ryan Tannehill, but he's got 100,000 miles on him. He's had a bunch of injuries. I'm surprised he's not signed by anybody, but, you know, he was making boku bucks in Tennessee. And if somebody says, well, you can come be here and compete for the starting job, but you're only going to get $5 million or $3 million or veterans money, maybe that's why Tannehill is not signed. OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr., legendary giant, has been a lot of different places, had significant injuries, still productive. Last year, he averaged 16 yards per catch, but limited play for the Baltimore Ravens. He was just this morning offered a deal to go to Miami. So it may well be he's going to be the next one that's going to sign. The unique one is a young receiver, Michael Gallup. Had a couple of good years with Dallas, then had a bad knee injury. Came back the second half of last season. He played really well. He's making visits. He's out there. He has not signed. Excuse me. He's younger than Odell Beckham. The weird one is Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, a former pass rusher, number one draft pick, high number one draft pick, former Houston Texan. He's kind of moved all over the map recently. He's become kind of a plug-in guy. He has not signed yet. He's making some visits, but his track record has been very erratic, and his ability to last a whole season has been even less. So he'll get signed, but I don't know for what price. Unique one is Justin Simmons, Denver Broncos, 9-year safety, 4-time Pro Bowler. He got let go on a cap issue. He's probably got some years left. Hunter Renfrow, why the Raiders ever paid him $11.5 million after a couple good seasons is kind of weird, but I think he goes somewhere as a slot receiver, but he's not going to get big money. Trey White, number one draft pick, Buffalo, still out there. Devastating knee injury over the last year and a half. Not the same player right now. Maybe he just needs more time to rehab. But he's still out there, and he's younger than any other names on that list. And then Stephon Gilmore, former New England Patriot, Dallas Cowboy, looks like he's really slowed down in the secondary. He doesn't have a contract yet. So there's still some names out there, but everybody's name now kind of has an asterisk next to him with something attached that says, pay attention to this.
Isn't it interesting how we follow players and they come out as a rookie in the big contract, and then we see who the later draft round guys that are the rising stars, and then we see them reach the pinnacle of their career, and then we see these guys start to go down the backside. Yep. And then some of them, it's a cliff. I mean, they just fall off the cliff. They're out. Other guys have a kind of a slow glide. glide down. You know, so I wonder, Tannehill might be a slow glide down kind of guy.
Well, there's a psyche adjustment that has to be made. When you're making $24 million a year and you're a star, and he had a couple of really, really good years teaming with Derrick Henry in Tennessee when they became an AFC South power, all of a sudden, it's not a $24 million payday anymore. So you're going to have to make a mental adjustment.
Oh, big
that
time.
Do you want to play this game? Do you want to play at a different price? You're going to play at their price? You don't want to be a piece of baggage that starts getting handed, you know, at the railroad station every other year. You keep moving somewhere else. So I think it's a tough adjustment for some of these guys that their career is moving into a different
yeah,
time frame.
Big adjustment. Clowney, wasn't he a number one overall pick?
He was one of them, yes.
Yeah, so how long ago was that?
Oh, geez, 8 years, 9 years?
Yeah, sounds
and
about
he played,
right.
Well, he played well in Cleveland last year, but he didn't start all season. Then he got better and better and more playing time. And by the end of the season, he was pretty good. But he was making decent dollars, and he's not going to make decent dollars. I think there's an injury history there that mm-hmm. has kind of trailed him, too. Okay, we go from that to the final topic on the table. This involves trade rumors and quarterbacks.
Yeah, I love trade rumors. So, and quarterbacks are always fascinating. What's newly?
Here's the burning question. What's going to happen at the top of the draft board? Because that's going to impact what might happen in the middle of the draft board. Obviously, I think we know who's going number one, Caleb Williams to the Bears, who's going number two, Drake May to the Washington Commanders. And there sits New England. New England doesn't really have a starting quarterback. They gave up on Mac Jones. They signed Jacoby Brissett. The Patriots at number three. There's one rumor mill out there that says they're going to bypass Jaden Daniels. A second rumor mill out there is they're going to trade down. If you could trade down, who the hell is going to be a quarterback? Are they going to stockpile picks and let somebody make a jump up to number three? Then you got Arizona at number four. They're desperate for players everywhere. They have no wide receivers for Kyler Murray. They could get a gem at number four, but they could get multiple picks if they traded out of the number four spot. And then the Chargers at number five. They need wide receivers. They could get a marquee wide receiver. They need offensive tackles. Maybe they could get one of those. But how far down do you go? We do know that Joe Ortiz has a history in Baltimore. They always traded on draft day, traded up, traded back, stockpiled assets, etc. But how far down can you go from the fifth slot and still get one of the offensive tackles you want? Kid out of Notre Dame, kid out of Penn State, or one of the wide receivers that you might want? I don't know that Marvin Harrison's available beyond five. And kid out of LSU, would he be available? So how far down are the Chargers going to go? Now, that leads us to the teams who want to make moves. Those are the Minnesota Vikings at number 11. Their starting quarterback as of breakfast today is on their roster is Sam Darnold. Really? Minnesota, I was told, is attempting to trade up from 11. They're going to try to get access higher to take J.J. McCarthy. They have to do that because Denver, right behind them at 12, is interested in J.J. McCarthy. They're spreading rumors in Denver, Michael Penix. They're not taking Michael Penix with number 12th pick. He's not ranked that high. They're trying to get the media to say, oh, Michael Penix, Denver Broncos, Sean Payton develops. I was told Denver is trying to trade up, which means they got to hop past Minnesota at 11. They may have to trade as high as 6 or 7 to get him. But Minnesota may have to hop up to get 6 or 7. And then there's the Raiders at 13. Now, their big question is, are you going to draft and develop a quarterback here, or you just continue to rent a vet? I mean, their quarterback right now is Gardner Minshew and the kid from Purdue, Aiden O'Connell. They're marginal. Now, they like the kid out of LSU, Jaden Daniels, but that's at number three or maybe number four. And that becomes a big question. You got to give up a ton to get from 13 where the Raiders are to either three or four, the Patriot or Arizona pick. So here we go. And I'll tell you, the next 3 weeks going towards the draft, John, it's going to be crazy. But those are the rumors out there right now. All of a sudden, J.J. McCarthy seems to be front and center, what a lot of people really like.
Yeah, I mean, that's one surprising me. And it's amazing how everyone seems to be falling in love with him. This is going to be a great time when all the trades happen, and a lot of them happen like seconds before the picks get in. So I love all of this. But I think it's interesting when you look at this from a general manager's perspective, because as a kid, I was growing up and you learn about the draft and you figure, okay, hey, they're just getting players they can plug in. Who's going to be my new quarterback, my new wide receiver? But then you realize, especially in baseball to maybe a greater extent, that these GMs, it's like, managing a portfolio, right? You know, it's like investing in stock and building assets. And AJ Preller certainly works with that in mind. But, you know, for an NFL GM, they probably don't have as many places to kind of stash their assets, right? They don't have a minor league system. But when you look at it from that perspective, how can you maximize value? This becomes a very interesting time for really smart people to make these evaluations.
Well, you got the top three quarterbacks that everybody knows, and now J.J. McCarthy, Michigan, has jumped to number four, and suddenly he becomes the hot name. Now suddenly it's Minnesota at 11, Denver at 12 are really interested. So somebody's going to jump the other guy to get inside maybe the top six. And then it begs the question, is he really that good? Because Jim Harbaugh is just praising him. Praised him today in Orlando at the coaches' press conferences.
That's his guy.
That's his guy.
Yeah.
And then you got, obviously, you got the whole wild card. And the thing is the Raiders, who seem to have fallen in love with Jaden Daniel from LSU, Arizona State. But, man, what you have to give up to go from 13-3 or 13-4? You talk about assets. Mm-hmm. You're going to empty the bank account to try to get this guy. Interesting going forward. Hey, those are topics on the table. You got opinions. Join us right now, Fans Forum. John, you got a ton of people stacked up here with opinions, and we got time. Let's run through where we are and what people have to ask about and what kind of answers we're going to give them.
Oh, my God. I mean, the number of questions here, it's bananas. Okay, here, let's go to Boss Split. Hacksaw, should the Jets bench KFC? Really, it's a question.
Oh, at this point in time, no. There's some big issues here. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen. You know, these teams have invested in players. Some players go through good seasons. Some players have injuries. Some players have a bad year and then bounce back the following year. There's a maturity factor here. So I just think it's way too early to indicate what's going to happen.
Yeah. You know, we talking Jets, Winnipeg Jets? We talking New York Jets? What are we talking about here, Lee?
I think we're talking Winnipeg Jets, but that's an iffy proposition. Young guys really go through some really, really tough times. And if the team isn't doing well, the team hits a cold spell, that's one thing. Sometimes young guys get overwhelmed. It's just really, really hard to, you know, get them to flip. Sometimes players have to go through a chunk of adversity and come back the next year, become better players.
Mm. Well, talking about better players here, look at Utah State. Danny Sprinkles, this is from Bruce, says Danny Sprinkles has to be a nickname.
Oh, I tell you, he's a good coach. Now, I hate to use the word because it says so derogatory, job jumper. You know, they hired him at Utah State to bring some stability.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to Logan, Utah, and he spends less than a year there, and he jumps ships the day after they get knocked out of the NCAA tournament. Job jumper. That just, it just doesn't sit right with me. And now he's going to take his center, Great Osabor, with him to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
It's what college athletics, college basketball has kind of become. But he's a really good coach and a firebrand, and he obviously knows where to go get players. So, I mean, what he did for one season at Utah State, but now the cupboard's totally empty. All those kids are graduating, and he's taking the big man with him.
You're so old school, man. You're like the guy that wants to work 40 years for the same company. When guys jump, when Keenan Allen jumps, when coaches jump, it kind of rubs you the wrong way. I mean, there's opportunity out there for these guys to advance their career, right?
You're the one that took the pen in my dictionary and under the L page where it said loyalty, you're the one who scratched out loyalty?
Well, when you got the phone call from Spanos to come to San Diego, you know, what, were you loyal in Phoenix?
No, because I had given them 7 years of my life and had done a phenomenal job, and I put Sports Talk Radio on the map at KTAR Phoenix.
Yeah, and you came here, and it was even better.
Exactly.
There you go. Okay, let's move on here. Let's go to JK. He says, greetings from Las Vegas, Nevada. Thoughts on the Padres rotation coming into opening day? Also, let's go Aztecs.
Well, go Aztecs. This has been a phenomenal run. I don't know that the run can continue after Thursday at UConn. This short work week really concerns me the most. You know, as I mentioned early on, they got home at 4 a.m. on Monday. They're going to have a short walkthrough. Game plan meeting on Monday. They're going to have a full practice on Tuesday, a short walkthrough on Wednesday, board the plane, go to Boston. They're going to play early Thursday. So their schedule is very compacted. Great job, though, by Brian Dutcher. In terms of the Padre rotation, let's just hold our breath. Darvish does not look like vintage Darvish yet. Musgrove does not look like vintage Joe Musgrove yet. Michael King has pitched pretty well. Obviously, Dylan Cease now comes on board, and he will give them a top four that's going to be pretty competitive, and they're going to be nine deep in the bullpen. We're just going to need to be patient to see if Yu Darvish coming off the elbow issue, Musgrove coming off the shoulder capsule issue, can actually be back what they were during the height of the prior two seasons. I just think it's going to take time. The saving grace is they've got nine relievers in the pen that I think I can trust right now.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I think the pen's going to be fine. We'll find out what these starters are going to be. And Michael King, I'm excited about him. Love the Cease deal. I think that was fantastic. The number five spot, we're still going to learn about that one. But I just want to take a side story. Yesterday, my daughter ran in the San Diego Half Marathon. So my wife and I, we trekked down to the gas lamp, and we parked right by Petco. And you just see have you seen the renovations that they're doing
there?
I mean, it's nice. I mean, that whole park in the park is very different now.
Yeah, the Gallagher Square with the building and all that.
Yeah, so it's a different vibe there. The kids have that wiffle ball court. They got a big screen jumbotron in the wiffle ball court, and it's terrific. So, and it's interesting when you walk by the park, you see on the murals which players they're highlighting, you know, and it's Tatis, it's Machado, it's Darvish, it's Musgrove. It just gives you an indication who their guys are, you know.
Exactly. Okay, we carry on with more. This is what we call Fans Forum.
Okay, let's go here to Ed. He goes, Ohtani was gambling, probably on baseball. Since when does an interpreter have access to a pro athlete's bank accounts?
Well, I concur with you, but there was a unique relationship. And now, that's not the sentiment that has been expressed by Dodger and Angel players who know Ohtani that say he doesn't go to casinos with them. He does not go out and party. He lives in his own culture away from the ballpark. So until they can prove to me, I'm not going to rush to judgment. I don't understand their stupidity. I said last week, was he naive? Was he stupid? How can you entrust this person? But somebody else, a Japanese guy that I network with, said, Lee, he makes $90 million a year in endorsements. So $4.5 million doesn't seem like a lot of money, and he doesn't pay attention very much to money. So I guess the flip question is, is Mizuhara really a seedy person? The more and more we dig, or has been dug, that's been revealed since last week, you start to think, oh, this guy seems to have had all kinds of different agendas while working with Ohtani. But I have a hard time believing Ohtani would ever bet on baseball.
Yeah, I do too. I agree with your point there. But it is interesting how all these players, in this case, Ohtani, has his own wingman, you know, because all the business and the endorsements and all the intricacies of his business life, not to say, you know, his athletic life as well, you almost need like a traveling secretary right to go with you.
Well, that's what he was.
Yeah. So it's interesting that these players have these kind of guys. But yeah, when I think I saw a rumor that he was supposed to, the translator said he went to UC Riverside, I think,
and he never
went.
And he never worked for the Red Sox.
Right. So if he's got all this history of lying and deceit and con jobs, then most likely he's the culprit.
Yeah. We'll wait to see about the latest rumor, Nippon Ham Fighters. And the scary one, did he have access to Ohtani's charities? Is there missing money there, too? The story is far from told.
Okay, here's another Ohtani comment. This is from John. He says, there's probably a lot we don't know. You wonder what the Angels knew when they decided to let him go.
The Angels to lure him from Japan, first of all, he was not a mega free agent. He was a limited free agent. There was a structure to how the contract would go. And one of the things was Ohtani wanted his own personal aide, and that was Mizuhara. And the Angels agreed, and the Angels allowed him to have all these clauses in his contract that he would rehab on his own outside of the circle of Angel doctors. He had a trusted group of advisors, and he had never had problems in the Japanese league with the Ham Fighters. So they agreed to all this, including this gentleman coming on board to be his personal aide, if you will. So that's where we are right now. The Dodgers accepted the same thing because nobody at that point when the Dodgers were about to sign him knew there was anything wrong with this guy. The Dodgers do have other Japanese and Korean interpreters within their infrastructure who help with other players. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are right now. There was no red flags when the Dodgers signed him. The Angels had no red flags that they were aware of at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, he always strikes us as a very sincere, humble, kind of a quiet guy. So it seems so out of character that he was like, you know, hooking up with bookies and everything else. But yeah, we'll find out. Don't rush to judgment, but we can speculate. Moving on. Okay, here, let's go to Joy. And she says, give Hacksaw a thumbs up.
I'll take that and give us him 5 stars. Hey, if you like what we're doing, we can use all the help to promote our podcast. So thumbs up, 5 stars. It works for all of us.
Yeah, it does. And I think it helps us in the YouTube algorithm and the Google search algorithm. The more likes, you know, we get, the more shares we get, the better. So you as fans, this is how you can support Hacksaw and what we're doing.
Would you do me a favor? You already intimated I'm old school. I understand that. Speak English. When you start talking about logarithms, speak English.
Well, it's an algorithm, Lee. Okay. You know, we want to come up in the search results. All right, here we go. Let's go to JK. He says, hey, John, San Diego State game versus Connecticut and Padres opening day on the same day. One word to describe this upcoming Thursday, please.
Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Turn off your cell phone. Do not pay any attention to emails or the internet. Just go enjoy these two games. Yeah, it's going to be a hell of a Thursday.
But the Padre game starts at what, about 1?
Yeah.
And then the Aztec game at 4:30?
4:40.
4:40. So, yeah, it's going to be a good day. Not a lot of work getting done on Thursday. That's right. We're going to be live streaming during the Padres opening day game. I got to bring a TV into the studio.
We'll have opinions here.
Okay. And here's one from Caverella. It says, great to see you back, Hacksaw. Grew up listening to your show.
Well, we did it for a long time. Proves one thing. You do it long enough, you should get good enough at it. But this has been cool. John and I linked up, I don't know, about 16 months ago. I mean, the volume of people that we're drawing to the podcast on Monday and Thursday, what we're doing on social media, places like Instagram, it's absolutely phenomenal. So if you're one of the ones in your spare time that sits home and is doing this, looking at your cell phone for topics on the table and Instagram, find my stuff because we get volumes. I mean, I'm trying to think. The ones that we've had the biggest reaction. We did one for Angel baseball fans in Artie Moreno. And what was the last number we checked about a week ago? How many hits we had?
Yeah, it was like 157,000 views.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
And we'd done one on Peter Seidler and the Padres' money problems. And I think we had in excess of 300,000 views on Instagram. We did one on the Chargers and Brandon Staley, good coach, bad, overwhelmed by the job. And geez, that thing was like 330,000. And we did one on Stan Kroenke, the Rams owner. Coming to San Diego. And the last time we checked, I think that was like 400,000 views.
Yeah, it was close to 500,000. And what's interesting about this is that we don't have like a, you know, 77,000 watt blowtorch signal, you know, to kind of promote what we're doing. Everything we're doing is organic. And it's all because of the fans and their sharing and liking and following. That makes the biggest difference.
We do like thumbs up. Give us 5 stars. We will accept it. And thanks for being part of the podcast. Go ahead, John.
Okay, let's go to Angel. More Ohtani. I think it is more about Ohtani helping a friend out than throwing games. I think Ohtani will be innocent.
Well, I raised the question. John put it up in a headline back early, victim or accessory. I just have a hard time understanding that he would be an accessory. But I don't understand that volume of money and making that volume of money to pay a guy who had, as Mizukawa said, business losses. Well, it wasn't business losses. You lied to the guy. It was gambling addiction, gambling losses. So the whole relationship changes. But that's a phenomenal amount of money. 9 times they accessed Ohtani's account and delivered him $500,000 every time they accessed the account.
Yeah. Have you ever like withdrawn $500,000 from the ATM machine?
Yeah. Good luck.
Big stack of green cash. Now, let's just for a moment, let's just speculate. Let's just say everything about this has gone wrong for Ohtani. Okay. Would this be the biggest scandal in sports history?
In terms of money, I'd have to think about that.
Money and gambling. And
well, I mean, the biggest scandal modern day was Pete Rose.
Yeah.
I mean, I read the John Dowd report cover to cover. I mean, the stuff that they broke down just on individual days was absolutely stunning. Reds played the Padres. It might have been a season opening series. Might have been maybe 1983. Pete Rose placed 8 bets from his hotel the morning of the opening day on all different games. And then he placed bets from the manager's office at that point, I guess, was Jack Murphy Stadium or Qualcomm Stadium. And they have all this broken down on where he was in what days and how many bets he placed and how much money he made or lost. It's absolutely stunning. So that was a phenomenal amount of money and obviously had terrible, terrible implications because he bet on baseball.
Well, again, more speculation. This is an interesting topic. If you, king of the world, wave your magic wand, what's the right answer to integrate or to not integrate gambling and sports?
You can't change it. Do you ever try to put toothpaste back in the tube?
Yeah, right.
John, it's out there now.
Yeah, it is.
Because Major League Baseball, like all the other sports, are now accepting all this money from casinos and betting programs, et cetera, as a revenue stream. It's out there. And the only thing you can do is deliver the message. You cannot, as a player, get involved in anything as it relates to gambling on your own sport.
Yeah.
Now, if you wish to go to a casino and you want to bet on the Super Bowl, if you're a baseball fan, I guess you can do that. Or an NBA fan, you can bet on the Final Four. But you can't. But they have to drive that message home. And yet there's a ton of players. NFL suspended, what, 9 guys last year for gambling on NFL games, mm-hmm. not their own team. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube because now every major league sport is accepting revenue streams from casinos and, you know, the DraftKings of the world. It's just a different world.
Yeah, if I were in charge, I would say, yeah, you're right. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. Gambling, I think, makes the sport more interesting, you know, because we tend to follow players. You know, if you're a fantasy sports guy, we follow teams that maybe we would never follow otherwise by betting on games. I think it makes the sport more interesting. I would be a much stricter enforcer of how it applies to the players and to management. Like I would, if I were in charge, I would not allow baseball players to vote to bet not just on baseball, but on anything. You know, you would have to be extraordinarily transparent because if there's any hint of gambling and any hint of, World Wrestling Federation kind of a vibe, then the whole sport goes down the tubes. There's some talk that we want to ban betting, and I don't think you can do that.
No, not at all. Tough, complex question for sure. Fans Forum, let's move on.
Moving on. Okay, yeah, let's go get some of our social media friends here involved, and we'll go here and talk about those Giants. And this is from SP, and it says, hey, this is a good sign. Giants will start the season, they're talking about Blake Snell going to San Francisco, with 2 legit ace pitchers, and if Ray can come back strong, they can finish the season strong too. Not saying it's overpaid, but this is likely 1-year investment, plus draft picks and international signing are not guaranteed to land the next stars, as many as the top prospects never make it through. The NL West is packed, and this is the best San Francisco could do by taking Chapman and Snell at a reasonable price, as both were supposed to make their more when the free agency started.
Your ghostwriter send that?
I know.
Giants fan here, my
exactly.
Co-host. Good acquisitions, yeah. State-of-the-art prices, yeah. Opt-out clauses, I wouldn't have done it, because you get Snell for 1 year. You have to pay a $4 million tax on the $30 million salary. You forfeit a second and third round draft pick, and you give up $1 million from your international signing pool. I mean, you're denouncing the draft completely lock, stock, and barrel. You need the draft as a lifeline to get players into your farm system. And if you have $1 million less in your pool, that means you're not going to be able to sign as many good players. And if you don't have draft picks at the top of the board, how are you going to get talent in your system to replace Snell or Chapman if those guys are opting out after 1 year? So I just question the opt-out decision made by that general manager.
Well, it's kind of like we said earlier. It's like managing an assets, you know, managing a portfolio. Yeah, on the surface, doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense. But, you know, do you think Snell is going to pitch in this opening series against the Padres?
He was supposed to pitch on Sunday in a minor league game in the backfields at Scottsdale. I did not find the report as to how he did. I don't think he's ready to pitch because he's only been in camp for, 4 or 5 days. Initially, the rumor was he was going to wait 3 weeks. He was going to stay in extended spring training and ramp it up. Maybe he's a little bit farther ahead than we thought, but it's not the same as pitching on a high school diamond in Seattle trying to stay in shape than actually being ready to pitch at the major league level. I'd be surprised if he pitched in the Padre-Giants series. I think I'd be surprised if he pitched either week 1 or week 2 because you got to build your arm.
Well, speaking of pitchers, I mean, have you heard anything about Trevor Bauer?
Well, just the fact they threw three shutout innings for the Mexico Diablos Rojos in Mexico City. But he, you know, I think he gave up four hits. He walked a couple batters, didn't allow any runs. But at this point, nobody seems to be very interested in him. I would bet he winds up staying there with the Diablos Rojos. That's one of the better teams in Mexico, and maybe he'll just pitch in Mexico this year and be dominant and have another year of his career pass and hope he can impress somebody to give me a chance, because nobody's given him a chance.
That's crazy. I mean, that really is. Let's move on here. Let's talk about the Chargers, and this is from Snoop. He says, Marty Ball returns for the Chargers.
Well, they've indicated we want to run the football. You know, their favorite statement was, just imagine how good Justin Herbert would be if he had a power running back. Well, they went out and got one in Gus Edwards from Baltimore. But they need help in their offensive line. And, you know, their veteran center, Corey Linsley, is retiring because of a heart issue. It was also a salary cap thing. Their right tackle is a black hole right now. They're sitting there at five. They could get a really good offensive tackle, either one out of Notre Dame or one out of Penn State with the number five pick. But if they trade out, they could also stockpile additional picks, because they're going to need wide receivers and they're going to need more offensive linemen. You can still get a good offensive lineman middle of the first round. You can definitely get receivers in the second and third round if you hit the jackpot on the right guy. So they have a tough decision. But they've openly said, it'll be kind of like Marty Ball. We do want to run the football to make that quarterback better, but they don't have the components to help them run the football. And they got a lot of vacancies, help wanted, a lot of different skill positions around Justin Herbert.
Speaking of Marty Ball, why did he have trouble in the playoffs? What was the reason?
He just was never creative enough to do something different. He was in Kansas City. I mean, he's a great in-season coach. When they got to postseason, they ran the same stuff. And in the postseason, people would devise different things that you had never seen before, defensively to slow the run down, and offensively to attack Kansas City. And he just never, ever got it done. He won, I think he won 200 games over his entire career, which is impressive. But his postseason record was like 6-9. It was just really strange. And he lost some of those games. They had home field advantage at Arrowhead. And they never got out of the first round. So he just did not make a lot of adjustments. And that's the thing that I think about the NFL. We talk about the brilliance of Andy Reid. Mm-hmm. There are going to be things you're going to see when Kansas City plays in a playoff game nobody's ever seen. It's not on tape anywhere. That's formations. That's motion. They'll just do different things. That's why Kansas City won the Super Bowl. The creative juice ambushing the guy who's never seen this. Mm-hmm. And Marty never did that.
Well, it's kind of like, this is the way we've always done it, and I'm going to keep doing it this way. But remember, I mean, he had that run in Cleveland with that fumble that blew the game. Who was that in that game that fumbled it?
Was it Kevin Mack?
It might have been, yeah.
They had the fumble and they had the drive.
The drive. That was the other one. Yeah, John Elway got him at the end. So you've had the Marty era goes back to the Browns, then at the Chiefs, and then the Chargers in that order. Wow.
And they had great success with the Chargers in season. They had a lot of fluke stuff that happened in the playoffs a couple of years in a row. One of them is injuries, but, you know, injuries are part of the game. So when Phillip Rivers has a knee injury and Tomlinson gets hurt, it's not the same team when you're going to play New England in the AFC Championship game. Of course, a year prior, they had the safety that made the interception, tried to run with it rather than sit down, fumbled the football. And
was that Marlon McCree?
There we go.
Another great day in sports history in San Diego.
A couple more here.
Okay, let's go here. We're talking about Chargers. This is from Retro JR. He says, hate to see Austin Eckler go. He was L.A.'s LaDainian Tomlinson. Good luck in D.C.
Well, he was a very different back, has to go to a very different offense. He's not a power guy. He's a tough guy. His numbers were down last year, but he got hurt really early, and the offensive line didn't protect Justin Herbert. Then Herbert was hurt, and then Herbert was gone with the two injuries. So, a really good player, self-made man, kind of like Tomlinson. Tomlinson was more of a tough guy inside runner. Eckler was more an on-the-edge runner who could also catch a ton of passes. Will be fun when he goes there, because he is going to be their back, and it looks like Drake May of North Carolina is going to be the Washington draft pick, and they lost their top wide receiver. One of the receivers, Curtis Samuel's gone as a free agent, so there's a massive rebuild going on right now in D.C. with the Commanders.
Now, if you were to like wide overview of the NFL and running backs, we always think of, you know, the third down specialist. Mm-hmm. We think of the tough guy, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. We think of the dynamic LaDainian Tomlinson. What are the different subcategories of running back?
Well, you got power back like Derrick Henry.
Right.
You got multi-purpose back like Tomlinson. Mm-hmm. You got great athletic back like Austin Eckler. So you very seldom do you find a guy that is the complete back. Derrick Henry's not going to catch a lot of passes. He goes to Baltimore to be the power guy. You know, Tomlinson could run and could catch and obviously could throw some because he did throw some halfback options. And Eckler became a dynamic guy doing a lot of different things. But you have to have a very different offense. If you're going to have an Eckler, you can't be a power football team. You're going to have to be finesse, and you're going to have to throw it and down the field and all that. If you want to play old-style football, then you got a Derrick Henry, and you load it with offensive linemen and tight ends and wham blocks and all that. So it just depends who you are as a coaching staff and what your philosophy is and how you can get guys to fit into the philosophy you want to run. So, I mean, you would not sign Austin Eckler to go to Green Bay where they want to run the hell of football in cold weather. It just doesn't work that way.
Isn't it interesting, though, that a lot of the greats were only one or two of those, but maybe not three. They weren't complete backs, right? Like Jim Brown certainly was not a complete back, even though he was one of the greatest of all time. But who would be the complete backs? You say LT. I mean, Christian McCaffrey today would be one. Who else would be in that spot?
Tyler McCaffrey is the most complete back out there in NFL football right now because he does all that, and that's a unique specimen.
Yeah, it's like Roger Craig, too.
Roger Craig, but that was a few third downs ago. That's not more recent. But, you know, you have to also understand that if you're going to do that, if you're going to run and throw to McCaffrey, how many hits he's going to take. And it, you know, if you get a running back that has over 300 touches, that's a lot of pounding. That shortens careers and a lot of risk of injury. So you're going to need a little lady luck if you're going to have a McCaffrey type who is going to be a component of your offense that has to produce catch and run.
Yeah, it makes sense. Get a couple more in here. Okay, I want to share some. As I told you, my Dodger fan or Otani fans have really crazy comments, but I wanted to share one of these. And this is a little bit long, but it's from Michael. He says, stop sugarcoating all of this about the show, about Showhead, he calls him. He should be suspended for 10 years. He's got so much privilege. He's got deferred money that the Dodgers corruptly did from the very beginning, should have been a warning sign, a red flag. The FBI will never come to the conclusion of him due to the fact that they're corruptible and will be passing out a deal behind back rooms, just like ESPN, just like Major League Baseball, and all of its rigging of games with umpires and broadcasters from top to bottom.
Conspiracy theory. Holy cow. Connect the dots on that one. You violated the first rule of today's podcast. No rush to judgment. Dodgers did not do anything illegal. Deferred payments have been part of baseball going back to the 1980s. People don't know there is a rule. You're deferring $70 million a year for Ohtani. You have to put 5 to 10% of the deferral amount in a separate reserve pool that can't be used that given year for players. So the Dodgers, I don't do math good off the top of my head, but just tell me what 5% of $70 million is. That's the amount of money the Dodgers had to put into the reserve pool that they can't touch this year.
Yes, and next year, $3.5 million.
Okay, next year they'll put more in, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm glad you can think on your feet because I can't. So they didn't do anything illegal. Is the money unbelievable? Yeah. Does he need it, though? No, he probably does not. There's no interest to it. It's kind of unique. A player would agree to that type of deferral without the agent saying, give me 5% interest every year. I must be a Dodger hater. Let's just let this thing run its course, and then we make a determination whether he was a victim or whether he actually was an accessory. And at the end of the day, what they did is no different than what the New York Mets and Pittsburgh Pirates did with Bobby Bonilla, which was one of the first deferred packages ever. Mm-hmm. And they paid that out over 20 years, or still paying it out over 20 years. So baseball has approved this. The union refused to interject and say, no, we can't do that. It's just another unique way to get guys on the roster and to fund it and fund it legally.
Again, it's just an example of how there's some people, like you say, conspiracy theories. They're all in and they're convinced that this is some scheme. But how much, let's talk about reality. Like in sports, in gambling, and there's been a couple of marquee cases, right? I mean, you talk about Pete Rose, but I'm thinking about referees or people that rigged it. You know, there was the NBA ref.
Tim Donaghy.
There was the, you know, Black Sox in 1919. I mean, what are some of those other examples? And, you know, have you ever seen any evidence in modern day of any of this kind of rigging?
No, because the Black Sox scandal is front and center of everybody. Everybody knows what happened and who took the money and eight men out and all that. Mm-hmm. And there have been stupid players who've done stupid things. I want to say there's probably been eight, maybe nine major league players going back since the 1950s that have been expelled from baseball. Now, there were some in the minor leagues that were expelled for life because they were taking paydays in the lower minor leagues. But there's really been nothing here in Major League Baseball because they know the end result. It's the end of their career if they get caught.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm surprised that some of these players even sort of dance around the fringes of this. You think that they would get the message and clearly stay in the good camp. But for some of them, it's a horrible temptation. I mean, it is a legit addiction. But I think some of these guys jump into conspiracy theories. It's fun to talk about, but we just need evidence.
Hey, listen, we hope you have enjoyed our Monday bonus podcast. It's brought to you by Dixieline Lumber, Home Center Stores, 9 locations to serve you in San Diego, and North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. We all need help with our eyes. When that time comes, just remember the name, North County Eye Center, Poway Escondido. John, take a deep breath because Thursday we got opening day Padres, we got Aztecs UConn basketball, and we'll be back here Thursday at 1 p.m. to set the stage for what's going on.
Sweet 16, baby.
Have yourself a great day. Thanks for joining us on Hacksaw's Headlines.
Join us again for Hacksaw's Headlines on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And find the audio version on your favorite podcast app.
Touchdown, San Diego!
For more content, go to LeeHacksawHamilton.com.